All right, so we're in Red West again, and this is not CSA World this time, and you're not in the CSA team. Who are
it's
you?
Not, it's the CSA Annex. We kind of ran out of space downstairs very quickly. You know, when I started, we were, I don't know, like 8 people, or like 100 or something now. So.
Rocking.
Ran out of space. I'm Ori, Ori Miga. I am the Group Program Manager for the Live Developer Platform.
Excellent.
And today we're going to be chatting about the Mesh Developer Platform specifically.
Excellent. So we've covered Mesh kind of in a couple of going deeps where we focus on the architecture and the engineering side of the engine. We haven't really scratched the surface of the APIs and the developer platform, so that's great.
Excellent.
So let's talk about it. What's going on?
What's going on? So at 100,000 foot view, sort of the way I like to describe the Mesh is four key elements. We talk about, and as you've learned, you know, what we really try to do with the Mesh is sort of take this holistic approach to modeling your digital life, right? Modeling all the things that really matter to you in the digital world, from the data you care about, files, folders, metadata, and state, the applications you care about, the devices you care about, and the people and the relationships you care about.
Cool.
And so the first thing we sort of have done with the Mesh is really build this model, what we call essentially our resource model, that captures all the relationships between those entities in your digital world. And so we spend a lot of time doing that. The second part we really did with the Mesh is build a set of cloud services that power sort of that resource model in the sky. And you've talked to a couple of guys in our team, a Cabolade, about the types of services we run in the sky, storage, identity, and directory, and communication, peer-to-peer synchronization, etc. That's the second component. Coupled with that, we have our runtimes. These are client-side runtimes that run on all the devices in the Mesh and give you that really software on the client and service in the sky coupling. And fourth, the user experience, the platform user experience, which are some ways we showcase sort of the marquee experiences on top of some of the platform elements that we've built. And so for developers, we actually took a pretty unique approach. We've had, you can imagine, months and months and months of debates about how do you expose the Mesh, it being fundamentally a platform, to developers. It feels very natural. And so we started, you know, we probably went back and forth, I can't remember, like a million times about the different ways we should expose this. And we landed with a few key principles, which has kind of helped govern all the decisions we made about the developer platform. The principles we landed with are, one, it starts with openness. We wanted the Mesh to be fundamentally, from day one, from ground zero, to be open and universally accessible to any kind of developer. Whether you're on the web, whether you're on Windows or a different platform, whether you use .NET or a different programming framework, whether you are sort of a webby guy or a client guy or a scripting guy or a browser guy, it didn't matter. We wanted universal appeal. So openness was sort of ground zero. After open, we wanted something that felt at its core sort of very natural in today's programming world, but is able to render itself to the different paradigms that sort of let developers feel at home no matter what kind of environment they like to write code in. I'll show you some of what that means in a second.
Excellent.
So openness, this very sort of resource-oriented approach that we'll chat about more in depth. We wanted something that, one was, sort of starts at a protocol level. Again, so basically any device, any piece of code on the planet can speak HTTP, of course being the universal protocol out there today. But at the same time, we wanted ability to provide a much higher level semantics, or the higher level, the higher up you go in our developer stack, the more sort of strongly typed semantics you'll get, again, that are more natural to the environments you're writing code in. And the fourth one was really about extensibility. Realizing that in day one, there's no way we're going to figure out all the types of data that you want to push into the Mesh, like all the types of data that matters to you in digital life.
Sure.
And we wanted developers to have a very easy, simple approach to adding their own custom data into the Mesh so they can consume it in any way they want, sort of in a meshed way. So those were the principles. And we landed by creating this very interesting resource model that modeled all these relationships. Abolade described it briefly to you. It has things like devices and applications. It has things what we call mesh objects with a very unique entity. And actually, we can either take a look at the resource model. We can draw a basic version of it on the board for you also.
Beautiful.
So actually, why don't we start in a slide actually. That kind of will help us. This is a slide that we use a lot to represent sort of the resource model, helps people sort of capture what's in it. So the Mesh resource model, again, we went back and forth and back and forth, and how should we represent this basic concept of all these resources in life? And we wanted something very natural to developers, and we landed in this very feed-oriented approach. We decided, what if you modeled everything in the world as essentially as a feed, something that every developer today is quite familiar with? And so all the data in the Met starts with a feed, and of course feeds have data entries, and data entries can have enclosures. Mm-hmm. And so, again, a very straightforward concept, anybody that's programmed with RSS feeds or Atom feeds or anything like that. But we added a very cool twist on it, which is everything in the mesh is bidirectional. That means that all the feeds are flowing both ways, essentially in a synchronized fashion.
Excellent.
And we use feed sync for that. Mm-hmm. And so bidirectional feeds represent everything. Now, you can take a bunch of feeds together and create a collection of feeds. And we made a container called a mesh object, which essentially is a container for feeds. It's a feed of feeds. Mm-hmm. And then we said, you know what? You can have a certain type of feeds that are unique. For example, you can have something such as a members feed, which will represent a collection of all the entities, all the people in the world that a particular object can be shared with. Think of it like almost ACLs. So it's an ACLs feed. A devices feed, which can represent all the devices in the world where this mesh object exists and synchronizes to. Mm-hmm. So you can have some mesh object that synchronizes to your laptop or your media center or to your cell phone, but you don't have to have it synchronized everywhere. So we can have a collection of devices. We can have a news feed. Think of it like almost, like a Facebook news feed or something that tells you what's going on in your digital world that's always up to date with all the latest news and sort of think of it like events and state about this object that gets synchronized around. And then you can create multiple of these mesh objects and associate them with the user. And of course, in this world, a user has his or her set of devices, his or her set of applications, all the global sort of aggregated news and state associated with that user, and all the data. Mm. And so when we talked about sort of briefly before about what are those key elements of the digital world that make up everything I own, right? It's all my devices, all my data, all my apps, and all the state I care about everywhere essentially captures all of that. Mm. And each of these is represented in the base resource model as a feed and a feed of feeds. And then everything essentially looks and feels the same. No matter where you go in the data model, of course, this is a simplified view, mm-hmm. But no matter where you navigate in the mesh resource model, on the cloud or on the client, mm-hmm. Everything is sort of navigatable in this very unique way.
That's excellent.
Yeah. Now, on top of this model, what we can do is, this is inherently a RESTful resource model. Everything in it is CRUDable, create, read, update, delete operations supported throughout it. Mm-hmm. And then we started to layer higher and higher levels of semantics. So if you were a developer, for example, who was not fond of the RESTful approach and you preferred something more, let's say, object-oriented or stateful or more scripting-like, mm-hmm. we have an ability to plug in all these types of libraries on top of this model that mm-hmm. present the model in the way that you as a developer will feel really good with. So if you're a VB guy mm-hmm. and you love VB, then we have a way for you to do this through VB without ever knowing about REST. If you're a guy who loves Link, mm-hmm. you can actually run Link over the mesh. If you like JavaScript, live a JavaScript OM.
Beautiful.
And we expect the community to actually go and create many, many more types of kits essentially for their environments, no matter what that environment is.
Excellent. Well, I love the idea of Link over mesh.
Yeah.
Very cool.
We can show you a little bit of Link over mesh too.
Excellent, man. And so C#, what if I'm, getting into F#?
Uh-huh.
Fine, no problem. And what about the C++ developers we so often forget?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
should never forget the C++
developer. Hey, man, I know.
We love our native guys. One day, perhaps not in the first incarnation of the SDK, but we're already working on a native object model to allow your native applications to also plug in.
Now, is there a notion of applications sort of self-joining the mesh? Does that make sense, that question?
Maybe. Tell me a little bit more.
I was just thinking about when you were talking about, if I wanted to develop an application that one of the things it does during installation is it creates a mesh, adds itself to a mesh.
Sure. Of course, in the mesh, one of the key principles, the user is always in control, right? And so the user must explicitly allow an application to participate in the mesh. Mm-hmm. We have facilities for delegated access to both data and devices in the mesh. Everything in the mesh is authenticated and authorized 100% of the time. And so if a user allows your application to participate in the mesh, applications can do lots of different things. They can both sort of work with data in the mesh, synchronize data in the mesh. They can work with news. They can get deployed in the mesh. They could do... Actually, if you want, we can take a look at a couple of mesh-style applications.
Let's do it.
you want to finish up with a data model browser, maybe, and just show what that looks like?
Wait a minute. That sounds like Jeremy Masner.
Hello, Channel 9.
How are you doing?
I'm OC.
Yeah. So what's going on? You just popped in here? You just appear here?
I love developers. I love developer platform. Even since I left DPE, I can't get it out of my head, Charles. So
excellent.
I'm working on the same team with Ori and thinking a lot about this launch we got coming up, our first unveiling.
Good.
And I love these demos. So it just seems like it might be a good transition just to go, we're looking at that data model.
Yeah.
Let's actually look at it in XML and just say, like, let's make that connection. What does a feed look like?
Let's do it.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Which machine do you have? Are you going to do this one? Okay.
Yeah, we'll start here. So this is, for those of you who have not seen it before, this is my device ring on my live desktop. These are all the devices currently in my mesh. I have a media center, my Mac over there. We have a mobile phone, an ultra mobile PC, and a couple of my dev machines.
Nice.
Now, my device ring allows me to sort of navigate around my devices, access them remotely, look at data on them, deploy things to them, etc. I'm going to go into my live desktop, and what you'll see on my live desktop, I have my pictures folder that has just a couple of pictures, and we can take a look at them. And this is what an end user might see when he looks at the mesh. But what does a developer see? Like, even though these look like a couple of pictures, what does a developer see when they look at the mesh? So for that, what I'm going to do is to do a couple of quick things. One, we're going to change the URL right in the browser. We're going to go to Mo, which is the mesh operating environment. Mo is a service composition runtime that runs on the cloud and on the client and essentially provides a unified view over all the mesh services. Whether you're running, again, online against the cloud or offline against the client, you get a unified view of everything in the mesh.
Nice.
So I'm going to go to Mo, and I'm going to tell it, hey, Mo, give me the mesh. And what I'm going to get is a feed.
Cool.
And, well, this is a very simple feed. Let's do a little bit fancier browsing of this feed. And so I'm going to take this URL right here, and we're going to paste it into this, what we call our mesh data model browser. And I'll enlarge it so you can see it better on camera.
Thank you.
There we go. And so what you can see in this now, let's take a look at my devices feed. So if I click on the devices feed, what you'll notice is, hey, look, there's my dev machine. There's the machine we're on right now. There's my ultra mobile PC. There is my media center. There's my Mac. They're all showing up here in this Atom feed, essentially. And the same will be true about any mesh object or other piece of data. They're just going to look like this feed.
And those are the exact same ones you saw on the device ring.
Those are the exact same ones you saw on the device ring. Think of the device ring as a visual view, essentially, just a visual cue over this data, which is in the feed.
Excellent.
Now, what if I don't like Atom? Let's say I am a JSON guy because I love to write JavaScript.
Mm-hmm.
So you can ask Mo, you can ask the mesh, render yourself to me as JSON. And let's say you don't like JSON. You like, let's say, RSS. You can literally take an RSS reader and point it. Actually, let's do that in a second. We'll take one of our favorite RSS readers. You can point it at the mesh and understand what's going on, get data, even get enclosures, get everything.
Excellent.
Now, this is still at the protocol level, right? Even if you're, let's say, you're a POX guy. I love this. If you're a plain old XML guy and you don't like all this new baloney with all this decoration, no problem. Right there for you.
Cool.
Now, the other incredibly cool thing about the mesh, notice the URL we're on. We're hitting, actually, mesh.com, right? We're straight going against the cloud. Well, what if you were offline and the cloud wasn't there? Well, check this out. I can go to what we call local Mo. This is the local mesh operating environment. And ask local Mo, look at the URL we're on. We're on localhost port 2048. That exact same set of feeds, let's say the mesh objects we have in our mesh, and again, over all these protocols, are served right out of our local runtime. So you can take your code as is, point it at the cloud and run it, and then you can say, you know what, I was just kidding. I want to run offline, point it at the local client, and your code will run without, essentially without change, because what the mesh system does, it synchronizes all the metadata and all the data in the mesh to all the nodes that should have essentially that data and metadata. And then the runtime abstracts you away from having to know, oh, am I talking to the cloud? Am I talking to the client? And if you make changes on the client when you're offline, again, whether it's metadata or data itself, we will synchronize that back into the mesh once you have connectivity again. And so as an application developer, quite a beautiful model where I have what we call symmetric, a symmetric programming model, online, offline, on the cloud, on the client, regardless of what protocol or programming language.
That's
this even a step further. What I'm going to do is I'm going to open up my Iron Python console. I like Python.
Right on.
So we're sitting in Python. So let's do the following. We're going to import Mo. It's a tiny little Python file, a bunch of wrappers to load up the right DLLs. So Now we're connected to Mo, so we can say mesh equals mo.load. This tells us, hey, connect me to the mesh operating environment. And now we can do things like this. How about this? For I in mesh dot devices dot entries print I dot title. And in a couple of lines of code, here are all the devices in my mesh that you saw in that feed that you saw in the device ring. Mm-hmm. And now I could do things like for I in mesh dot mesh objects dot entries print I dot title. And that gives me all the mesh objects that are currently synchronizing against my system. And so if I don't like, I don't have to know that this is RESTful. I don't have to know anything about Atom or feeds or whatever. I like my Python collections this way, and let's go.
Outstanding.
This is one of those kits you talked about earlier. Where this is just a .NET framework library, some nice .NET classes.
Yep.
You use it for many languages. F#, go for it, baby.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know it.
Love it.
So let me ask you.
Sure.
I'm a stickler for details sometimes.
Tell me.
And over the past few interviews I've done, I've noticed the terminology core object and mesh object. Certainly they're the same thing.
Yes, they are. Okay. Absolutely. We're still in the early stages of the platform. We're having daily heated debates about what should we call this and how should this look and what the semantic for this should
be.
And one of the things we're very excited about, we have an SDR coming up with our first set of real external customers to validate not just the approach we took, but give us some real feedback on how do they like the protocol, how do they like the semantics, how do they like the APIs.
Certainly. And so let me ask you this. Certainly in today's day and age, dynamic languages are becoming outrageously popular. That's why we wrote the DLR, so we could actually support them on the CLR, which is statically typed.
Yep.
So let's talk a little about that. It sounds to me like that's really not that big of an issue. If I want to write Ruby,
let's go.
You just wrote Python, right? Big deal.
Bring it on.
So what I wanted to ask just real quickly is, how did you pull that off? You're just writing libraries, right?
There's a couple of things we're doing. One, because we have this very sort of at the base level, we're protocol sort of oriented and portable, gives us a lot of flexibility in the higher level libraries we write to make sure that they can feel, again, very natural in that environment. Now, what we did, other folks out there on the web today, a lot of what they do is they have a, let's say they may use Atom as a representation, and then they will translate that over to, let's say, JSON or something else. But what that sort of ends up doing is you end up bleeding semantics from one protocol to another, and all of a sudden, I like to compare it to what think like pinvoke, like you know, or com callable wrappers. So you have a com object, and yes, you can access it for managed code, but it really wasn't designed from day one to feel good, right, in .NET. And that's what a lot of systems out there today, what happens because they bleed over those semantics across the programming language and protocols, they don't feel as natural in that environment. What the mesh operating environment has, we actually have a core base info set that represents all the key elements in the mesh. And then we render that in a lossless way into different protocols, into different API kits, which allow the API kits, again, to feel very natural in that environment. And so you'll notice our link semantic look really natural, right? Like when we have, of course, a Silverlight managed libraries as well, and they feel very good in Silverlight 2.0, whether you're writing it, you know, for the browser, or whether you're using .NET framework on the client, they'll feel good. And when we'll do a Ruby kit, or the community does a Ruby kit, we fully expect that it should feel like a Ruby kit should feel.
Outstanding.
And of course, DLR is no exception.
Sure.
Right.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. All right. Well, let's take a look at some other stuff.
Let's take a look at some other stuff. So, one thing. Let's actually take a look at a simple app. I'm going to show you. So we talked about how applications can sort of take advantage of the mesh, and there are lots of different ways. We call some things we'll be able to connect to the mesh, some will synchronize to the mesh, some will deploy into the mesh. And I'll show you a few examples. Before, you don't have to move the camera just for 1 second. No need to film this. This is just a...
There might be no need, but doesn't stop Carlos.
Yes.
Sorry.
No problem.
Sorry. This is Channel 9, man.
Yeah.
This is all about... If interviewee moves, follow him with camera. All right, cool.
Very good. We'll come back to Media Center in a second.
Okay.
What I'll do is let me kick off a little app. Many of you might have seen this app before. It's called Family Show. And I'm going to kick this app off on a couple of machines in my mesh. So what Family Show is, let's go ahead and I'll open up a file. What Family Show... Basically, think of it like, basically a viewer over your family tree that you can maintain. It's kind of cute.
Genealogy.
It's a great genealogy tree. It's a great WPF app.
Yeah, this was built by Tim Sneath's guys as a best practice example of using WPF, and the source code's out there. This is a really great way to go learn WPF features.
It's beautiful. You know, it allows you to zoom around your tree. This is, of course, the Windsor family tree. I lived in England for a few years, so I kind of like this one. It allows you to navigate between the royal family, see their pictures and details, and you can change the timelines. Very cute. Now, this kind of application, of course, is a client app. It makes no network calls. It's not aware of cloud services or anything like that. And what we really tried to do in the Mesh developer platform is help applications which are sort of, think of it like service-oriented, like if you're a Facebook or a Twitter or a Flickr or something like that, help them get to the client, essentially incorporate client-side software into a service. Mm-hmm. And if you're a client guy and you're writing WPF apps that are inherently sort of local, they leverage the power of the local machine, the rich graphics, offline storage and all that, how do we service enable you? Mm-hmm. And so what we did here is, what if you wanted to write a family genealogy tree app that you could share with other people and that can essentially synchronize data between multiple machines so your family can work on the genealogy tree together. Mm. So this guy over here, you'll see there's Charles over there, and there's Charles over here. Let's say Jeremy was working on this one at home and now was working on it here.
Okay.
What can we do to mesh enable, or what we call meshify, this application?
Nice.
So what I'll do is, let's go over here and grab, I'm going to grab a new image, and we're going to give Charles a new face.
Yeah, I like that.
Very cool. And we're going to give him a new middle name. His name is going to be Channel 9 Guy. And what you'll see, hopefully, a few seconds, if you take a look at that machine over there, where Jeremy was working, that data just synchronized over to another machine in the mesh. Now, the cool thing about this is, we don't have to dive too deep into the code, but we can enable a developer to do that without ever understanding the concept of sort of synchronization and sharing and all that. We can allow a developer to put his or her data essentially in the mesh, either through the file system as data or literally into the mesh object model, into the mesh resource model. Mm-hmm. They can model their data, and we will take care of synchronization and some of the conflict resolution semantics depending on your needs. Mm-hmm. And you can actually talk. This application only talks to local mesh operating environment. Mm. It doesn't go against the cloud, doesn't make network calls, nothing like that. And we meshify this application literally with like 30, 40 lines of code, if that.
Now, let me ask you this. That doesn't, you're not actually, it's an important point. The code is happening outside the context of this process, right? In other words, you're not recompiling this application. That would be ridiculous.
Well, you have two options as a developer.
Yeah.
One, you can write it in such a way that you put, you know, we can pick up the data, let's say, from the file system, magically synchronize it. You don't have to do a thing. We kind of give developers what we call sort of that spectrum. Mm-hmm. You can go on one end where you literally don't change your app at all. We will take care of the back, you know, file symbol. No touch. You get some goodness, some beauty.
Sure.
If you want to do a little bit more work, you'll get more beauty. You get do a little bit more work, you'll get more and more and more capabilities depending on how deeply you want to integrate with the mesh operating environment.
Okay.
So you have the option of doing whatever makes most sense for your application.
Okay.
Just two key things which are worth pointing out. One is that point about localhost is so important because I think we've all used applications, client applications, that try and connect to services by literally making network calls every time you click around on the screen and you watch your app hang.
Absolutely.
You watch it do all these funny things. And I think client developers increasingly are figuring that out and saying, you really got to cache stuff locally. You always talk local. That way it works online or offline. Mm-hmm. And in the background, you pretty aggressively try and keep that thing up to date. And the beauty of the localhost version of Mo is that it does that for you. So you don't have to worry about any of that as a developer. You always say, hey, here's some simple local resources. And we take care in the background of making all those connections.
So I guess one of the things that I was kind of perhaps naively getting at was, because I've used this application, and as a user, I think of just marking a folder as add this folder to my mesh, right?
Yep.
So I was thinking of if that folder happened to be data that an application that a data store for an application,
you're done.
Then I'm done.
Love it.
That's what I meant. That's what I said. This could actually be consequential.
Absolutely. So we've actually implemented both versions. We have a version that just synchronizes its data through the file system, and we have one where you can actually put your data in the data model, and you'll get different benefits. So there are sort of four key dimensions of what a developer gets from the mesh sort of platform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get right out of the gate synchronization engine that's pretty complex. It does both, as Abelardo sort of discussed with you, it does both cloud, client-to-cloud synchronization and conflict resolution where the cloud is an arbiter, and it can also do peer-to-peer movement of sort of a lot of your data. Metadata flows through the cloud between nodes in the mesh, and data can flow peer-to-peer.
Nice.
And our sync engine will take care of that for you without you knowing what's going on. We will figure out the best way to move data around, think of it that way, transparent to you, through different networks, through NAS, through all sorts of complicated stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. Data synchronization, which enables you to do online and offline, out of the gate. Part two, the mesh inherently has an integrated sharing model, like an ACLINK model around all the things that sort of share this data. And so as a developer in your application, you can actually integrate and say, I want to share this object, but only with this user, right? Or only with these users. And you can invite, literally, you can invite users to share objects and data in the mesh. And as a developer, you don't have to worry about how that works. We'll take care of the ACLing and everything related to it. And, of course, you can revoke access to objects.
Sure.
Which is a very nice thing across across your mesh. In addition to that, we have a system, as I mentioned before, that's all about news and activities. It's, you know, in today's world, like what's going on is critical. Like your application wants to know about both transient states, things that might only be true for a few seconds. This machine is online. This user is looking at this document. This machine is locked or not available. And sort of long-running state, like news events, where you actually want to see what happened yesterday. Hey, your mom edited this document yesterday at 9 o'clock at night, or this application, you know, changed this piece of data. And so we have a full, fully integrated activities and news system into the mesh, so you can constantly keep track and state not only within your mesh, but across other people's meshes.
Nice.
Across things you share. So that's the third thing.
And as an application, you can contribute into that also, which is
of course.
Key. Right. So
of course. And actually, we'll take a look.
Oh, yeah. Let's do it. Let's see it.
Well, we'll
did I cut off your fourth?
No, yeah, and the fourth one.
What's the fourth one,
Jerry? The fourth one is all about letting your application take advantage of the topology that we understand. So devices, deployment of your code, deployment of your application. And let's take a look quickly at an example of how you take a different, totally different kind of application. We're going to take a web application and bring it into the mesh. So this app, some of you might have seen the PhotoZoom application we pushed out not too long ago by Matt. Augustine, very, very cool app. It incorporates Silverlight, Deep Zoom.
Nice.
So what this app lets you do, this is, of course, a web application, Silverlight application. Actually, we can go take a look at where I live. So we're going to zoom into this photo really deeply. Look at that detail you get on the Space Needle.
You live on the Space Needle?
Well, I live right
nice.
Next to the Space Needle. So this application is running currently online. Now, what if you wanted to be a little extreme and say, you know, what if I can run this application everywhere in my mesh, including offline? The mesh application model, one of the types of applications we support is this kind of app. And if I go back to my mesh, look at the applications that are currently provisioned in my mesh, you'll notice that PhotoZoom, that app, is one of the apps that's provisioned in my mesh. And what that enables me to do is actually we're going to go to my desktop, and we're going to launch the PhotoZoom app right inside this container. Now, let's talk for a second about what happened here.
Mm-hmm.
This is the exact same HTML and exact same Silverlight code, identical to what's running in my other application. You didn't rewrite it. You packaged it in a way. You essentially gave us a manifest that the mesh app model understands. Mm-hmm. You described your application. You said, hey, run this in my mesh. What we could do is actually we can take that code and the data, synchronize it to the client, and run it offline. So now if I pull the network cable, this application will continue to run with its data. So I can come in here.
You should make the point about where those pictures are coming from.
So these pictures, when you described your application, these pictures, the data you described and you essentially hinted to us, put this in the mesh data model, in the mesh resource model. We take the pictures, the metadata, and the physical data itself. We synchronize it using our sync engine for offline. Now, it's not just about photos, because let's put a comment about this photos. Wow. Space. How about just space rocks?
Yeah.
Huh. I'm going to hit post. So we're going to post a comment about this photo. This is running in a host on my local machine. Now, if I go back to the web app, I go back to the web application we were looking at and hit F5, check
there
this out. It actually went, what happened, that client application when I posted that comment was posting it locally. It went to local Mo and said, let's make a comment. The sync engine picks that up, synchronizes it through the mesh. And if I, same thing, if I go to this online sort of site and I'd say, hey, this is neat, and we're going to post another comment. Now I'm posting this on a website app running in the cloud somewhere, nothing to do with the mesh, on a third-party app server, think of it like that.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take that data and, again, bring it back into the mesh.
Nice.
And check this out. There's the comment we just made on the website. And there's no direct connectivity between that app and this app. This guy puts it into the mesh in the data model, gets synchronized with the sync engine, picks up, there's events that get fired, this guy picks it up over here. And so these applications, these web apps, can essentially now run offline, work with offline data, and get that synchronized back to our cloud and then back to a third-party developer site.
Excellent.
Which is very cool.
But this shows some of the flexibility of feeds, right? Because under the covers, if you were to look back at that data model browser, what you'd see is the photos, the raw data in there, that's just a feed. They always have data entries. The news, just a feed with data entries. The application, the HTML, the JavaScript, all that stuff, is, again, it's just a feed with the data entries. And you can look at it, you know, as Ori was showing, in the browser, with the, you can look at the XML. As a developer, you can go query the stuff and manipulate it however you want. You can create your own custom feeds for every application and sync that stuff around. And then if you want to, you can integrate back in with those common feeds that are well understood across the mesh. So Ori showed the data, the resource diagram that had that thing called the news feed. You could imagine, being this app, you could choose to keep your comments off to your side, or you could integrate back into that news feed and say, hey, Ori was looking at the Space Needle, and make that part of the news feed so that people he was sharing with could see what was going on there.
Absolutely.
And so I could see you have a ton of flexibility as to how you integrate in with those things.
Now, I could also see a very interesting scenario where, you know, developers add a project to the mesh and work on the project together.
Yep.
And so I write code during my, you know, whenever, and then another developer writes code, and then it all synchronizes. Can you do that? I mean, you could be able to do that.
You could. I mean, we should be careful. This is definitely not a version control system in the sense you want to check out it.
Good point.
It depends what kind of sort of relationship you have with your fellow coders. You know, maybe 100%
trust, man.
Wait, what did you do?
No, but it's certainly the mechanism is general purpose. And again, you could do it either, as Ori was saying, by having an application that's almost completely mesh agnostic and just write stuff into the file system and our Mo operating system, our operating environment, just picks up those file system changes and pushes them around.
Excellent.
Or you can really try and get smarter about it. And you could write potentially all kinds of things with the mesh. You could write the file list. You could write who has things locked and not things locked into the mesh and let that replicate around. So that would be a sort of a next step of integration with the mesh, where you're rewriting your app or adding code to your app to say, hey, I really want to get smart about this mesh thing.
Mesh enabling. Right on.
Meshify.
Meshify. I like meshify.
Getting meshed up.
So one thing that we'll sort of let's meshify another couple of apps, some simple things we've done.
Okay.
This one in particular we like. We try to see what app that's news related we can meshify. Here what I have is I have a live folder, a mesh object that has a bunch of news items that are associated with it. You can see I've been posting a bunch of news with, in my mesh. Now if I go to Twitter, which who doesn't use Twitter these days, and we are tweeting with channel 9. And we're going to post a little tweet in here.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you can do this through your cell phone, wherever, and this is just the standard Twitter application. What we wrote is a little sort of mesh connector for Twitter, just as any third-party ISV can, which allows you to read our news feed, Twitter news feeds, and sort of use our sync system to move data back and forth. So, over here. And what this enables me to do is actually show how you can use not just, if you don't care about data or files or something like that, and you just want feeds off of our news, like in a standard RSS feed or an Atom feed, or you want to do it through feed sync because you want to do bidirectional, we can actually move data back and forth between services. And there's the very cool post I made earlier from my mesh over here. And we can actually send news events back and forth. Now, you could do it unidirectionally if you want as a developer, if you only want to push data in, or you could do it bidirectionally if you're interested in sort of getting data out.
Sure.
And then we can do the same with photos. So, for example, let's take a look at my Facebook album. So we wrote another sort of mesh connector for Facebook, just again as as we sort of learn about what it takes to build applications for this platform. And what this enables me to do, notice on my Facebook album, I only have a single album now. And what we could do, if I'll go to our, let's go back to our mesh, we'll go to the live desktop, and I'll show you our, we have a simple album in here, and we'll add more pictures to it in a second in a very cool way, and I'll show you how. So we have a bunch of photos in here, in this album. This is a nice Silverlight view. There's Noah. There's a meeting we were in with Ray.
All right.
There's a Boeing plane. If I invite, let's go ahead in here, and this is again just a prototype, early previews of the kinds of things we anticipate developers being able to do. I'm going to send an invite to this connector, which in our case is Facebook@mesh.com. It's just a placeholder to how you could potentially identify an application. And what we'll do is we will now enable this connector to synchronize data back and forth from our service to their service. So if you were on Facebook, and this was a Facebook connector, and let's make sure our Facebook connector is actually running. That'll be good. Now, you can, of course, run this code on server side. You can run it client side. You can run it, you know, you have the topology is really up to whatever makes the most sense for your app. Seconds to wake up. And there it is. Now, there are the pictures that we had in our mesh, now synchronizing up, and they can go bidirectionally.
Awesome.
Now, these pictures, of course, are on my client. So this is our local view over those pictures, and I can see what device it's synchronized with. And when I add a photo in here, of course, it can flow through all my devices and to other services. So what we'll do to show you some of the things we did, Jerry, if you wiggle the mouse on our Mac over there.
Wake up, baby.
Wake up, Mac baby.
All right.
There's our Mac, and of course, again, the mesh, universal appeal. And so if you're running, for example, many of our customers run Office on the Mac, and they want to synchronize their Office documents through the mesh, why not give them a way to do that? Do you want to start up photo booth over there? Do you know how to do that? I'll start up photo booth for us. Yeah,
I'm out of touch, man.
This is a foreign platform.
Totally.
So we'll start photo booth, and you see, notice there's our little mesh Mac client running.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to take...
Can't be on camera. I'm on the witness protection.
Oh, you're on the witness protection program. I'm going to take a picture of us saying, hello. So we're going to take a picture on our Mac.
Okay.
Then we're going to take the cell phone right here while we're doing that. And how about we take a picture? I can't even see if I'm going to get Jeremy or not because we're taking the picture backwards.
Wow.
So we took a picture with our cell phone. I think we got Jeremy.
Yes, we did.
Did we?
Yeah, there he is.
All right.
I saw him.
And now what we'll do is let's take a look. This is another device, completely different device in our mesh. And actually, why don't we look at, let's see, which device is going to pick it up first. This is one beautiful thing about our mesh. There's Jeremy. Took a picture from the phone on. There is you and me with our thumbs up that we took a picture on the Mac from.
Absolutely.
And what's going to start happening now, this data is going to start synchronizing across all the devices on the mesh. So let's see over here. This is our ultra mobile PC. And in a few seconds, you know, the mesh, the sync engine tries to figure out what is the most efficient way to route this data around. Sometimes you'll go peer-to-peer between devices. Sometimes you'll go through the cloud. Sometimes
sure.
You won't be able to get there at all. And there's us. And how do we get over to the right? There we go. There's the picture we just took.
Yep.
And that's on a completely different device. It might have different connectivity characteristics altogether.
Absolutely.
But these, again, are all those devices you saw in the device ring at the beginning. And what happened is each of those devices, Ori has gone to them and said, make them part of my mesh. And the device actually gets its own ID, its own authentication, its own set of security credentials. So the device can communicate directly with the mesh and say, hey, I actually am Ori's device, and Ori has asked that I have access to this set of photos. And the device can do all that interaction, whether you're logged in or not.
I think you can capture this real quick. Do you see
this
right there? The ghost.
Yeah.
What the ghost is, the ghost says, hey, the mesh recognizes that a file should be here, but it hasn't gone there yet. It's hinting to you that it found new data for you.
Mm-hmm.
And what it's going to do, as soon as the ghost is done synchronizing, it's going to go through a realization phase and realize that ghost into the local file system. There's
nice.
Jeremy.
All right.
So this came from a cell phone. Now, even cooler than that, if you go back up to your live desktop, Now, let's open our pictures folder. Now when you take a look at your media view, now you can actually, this data is also mapped in the cloud. So if you don't have access to your devices and you're not offline, you're in a kiosk somewhere and you want to take a look at these photos, it doesn't matter what source they came from or whether it's even from your mesh or somebody else that you're sharing data with, we'll take care of all that complexity on your behalf.
Very cool.
Which is very powerful, very powerful. Let's see. Oh, let's actually try one other demo that nobody's ever seen before, including probably Jeremy.
All right.
We say, you know, we constantly try to think up what are the different ways that developers or even end users are going to want to get at data in the mesh, because we really want to drive home that notion of, you know, come one, come all, this universal appeal and applicability. Well, what if I don't like any of this stuff? I'm not into REST, and I'm not into, you know, managed, and I'm not into, like, imagine I liked web dev. Like old school, hardcore web dev. What if I can come over here and type this, net use HTTPS, and I'm going to go to mesh.com, and I'm going to say I am oriamiga@live.com, and don't capture my password.
Didn't do it.
We might. Oh, you know what? Because you have to tell Mo I want dev. So let's go to drive. About drive M for mesh. So you go to mesh.com and you say go to Mo and give me dev. And we're gonna type in my password. That your network name still cannot be found. Is it not /dev?
Bleeding edge demo, man.
That's
so
great.
Yeah, bleeding edge demo. We haven't actually nobody's ever seen. So let's take. Let me take a look real quick. And let's see. We might be configured for a different environment.
You want me to talk while you type?
Yeah, you can talk.
Get away a little
this
bit.
Is real time, man.
So Charles, you know what that syntax is? When you do a net use HTTP, you know what that?
I haven't done that in a while, man.
All right, so that's dev.
Okay.
That's a feature that's been built into Windows.
For a long time.
7-8 years now?
God, at least.
Dev being another one of these open standards. It's, I think it's supposed to stand for distributed authoring and versioning, although no one really does the versioning. But it's a set of verbs over HTTP that it expose file system-like semantics. And Windows has had this, what they call the dev redirector built in. So just the way you can do net use, whack whack, some SMB share, you can do net use HTTP to a dev share. Mm-hmm. And Windows is able to communicate that with that thing as though it was a file share.
Very cool.
So, I think.
Yeah. Well,
I haven't seen this demo, so
we're back.
See it.
Okay, so I typed it on this machine. My dev stack over there is configured for our live int environment, and we're running in our live production environment over here.
Okay.
So I basically did a net use to this cloud URL, and I asked the mesh operating environment to render the mesh over dev to me. And what that means now,
can
I can
crank up the font. Maybe?
Can you see on camera? Let's get this font bigger.
It's a little bit out of focus.
How's that?
That's good.
Boom.
Yeah.
Nice. So look, now I'm going to go to drive M. And M is literally my cloud. And if I look through DIR on my cloud, there's my folders. So let's go to folders. Remember we had a My Pictures folder?
Mm-hmm.
There it is. City My Pictures. There's all the photos. Where is our... Let's grab photo 4. I don't know what photo 4 was. So I'm going to type... How about MS Paint? Photo 4. Now remember, this photo is actually, this is a mapped drive directly to the cloud, right? There's no client, anything. Oh, it's our.
Right on.
Now what I'm going to do, we're in Paint, right? So we like Paint, very powerful program, very glad we have it in Windows. Let's put a circle, big red circle right over our picture, and I'm going to hit Save. Now, this could have been a Word document that I opened in Word, so I can actually go file open from Word and open it directly from the cloud, like not going through RESTful, any, like straight through web dev over to the cloud. So if we now go back to my live desktop, and let's refresh our My Pictures folder, and let's take a look at our images now. This is my live desktop. Where is our... Oh, picture did not get up there yet. Did we not save it? I thought we saved it. We probably should have saved it. It needs a few seconds to make it through. And it allows you essentially to edit all your document over this protocol.
There it is.
Look at that.
Amazing.
Right? And you didn't actually go... You know, my mom, you can actually add this... The cloud is a shortcut on your desktop. Or go to File Open in any Windows dialog box... and open and manage your files in the cloud right over this common protocol that looks like it's on your natural network.
It's interesting for two reasons. One is because DAB is a great set of functionality to have in a platform, and again, it's another easy way for applications to get in and interact. But the second thing is it speaks to this notion of the runtimes that Ori was talking about. He talked about the service composition runtime, and the fact that we've intentionally architected the services to allow for these different kinds of formats and different kinds of protocols. So, you know, you saw before we were switching between ATOM and JSON and POX and what have you. Mm-hmm. And here we're switching between sort of standard HTTP RESTful stuff and this DAB approach to protocols. And the runtime is really built to support that and be very, very flexible. And I think that's a great place where we'll look forward to getting feedback from the community about what we should be adding over time and how we plug those things
in.
Let's take a look at one other thing real quick to give you yet another different view over that same piece of data. Because one thing we really thought about a lot is how can you decouple sort of the applications and their data in a way where if your app puts data in the mesh and my app written in a completely different way wants to get data out, how do you really facilitate that? Through this one. So now we're going to look at a feed. This is, again, off of localhost. This is a feed served by the local mesh operating environment of our pictures. So we're going to go look at the data entries feed. And this is a set of all the data entries that represent those pictures that we've been manipulating. Let's take this URL. Again, this is a local URL. And let's go to feed reader, which is a nice, cute little RSS reader. Let's create a new RSS feed for this RSS reader to read this. Again, we didn't touch any of this code. Notice this feed has enclosures. Now, this RSS reader looks at this feed that's being served locally, right? You could be completely disconnected. It looks, and this comes out of local mode. And check this out. You can actually, once it downloads these pictures, you can actually open the enclosures and look at the feed, look at the names of the pictures that we put in the mesh, and these are exactly the same ones that are stored in the cloud, synchronized to the client, and actually served out of our local runtime.
Amazing.
So the one that we edited, which was what, photo 4, let's see if it's synchronized. Open it up. Notice that this picture is missing the red circle.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're currently talking to the local client, and because potentially we were offline or that guy hasn't gotten a chance to synchronize that. But in a few seconds, when the sync engine catches up.
Sure.
And even though I'm in a completely different app that has no idea what the mesh is, right, like it only knows it gets a feed served to it, right? It's a very powerful paradigm, we think.
Oh, absolutely.
And we haven't shown you link yet, but doing link over.
Link is.
You want to see link?
Yeah, let's do link really quick.
Yeah, we got a little more time to go.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do a really quick link demo. I'll pump up our font size a bit so we can see. So let's make a new console app, and I'll pump up the font so you can see. Options, text editor.
And just so people in the audience know, we'll probably end up doing a fair number of screencasts that we'll put on Channel 9. Screencasts being watch people actually do what Ori's doing right now in full resolution. That's a definition.
We're hoping to get
at some point
over
we
time,
can. So over time. I just want them to know because I don't want them to think this is all they're going to get is my shaky, bad camera work.
So as we speak today, it's 6 days before our unveiling. I don't know if we're going to get it done by the time.
Absolutely, yeah, no. We'll but at some point in time, it would be cool.
So let's go ahead and take a look. What we'll do is I'm going to add a couple of files from our Mesh SDK to our project. So our Mesh SDK, of course, is docs and libraries and samples, everything you expect. Currently in the libraries, there's desktop CLR libraries, JavaScript libraries, and Silverlight libraries. And we're going to go ahead and grab the Live Mesh Operating Environment, DLL. So now what you could do is say Mesh, and Live Visual Studio IntelliSense. Mesh equals, how about we'll do a mesh.load. And notice you can load local, of course, everything. Let's load, okay, and then let's connect to our cloud. Notice the URL we're going to is we're going to go directly against the cloud. Of course, you can do this locally. And now, if you're not sure how to enumerate things in your mesh, you can ask for mesh code snippets, and you can go down our code snippets and go to show me how to, let's say, enumerate all the objects in my mesh.
Such a killer feature.
Love it.
Have you seen that before?
No.
It's a Visual Studio 2008 feature. So you can...
We've had code snippets before in 2005.
In fact, wow, so there you go. Yeah. I've never seen them until you download it, but as part of our SDK, we can actually plug these snippets into the system so that VS picks them up.
So what we're going to start before we do link, what we're going to do is we'll connect to the mesh, load all the mesh objects, And look at that. Network credential requires system.net, love Visual Studio. Here we go. So we're going to hit F5, and this puppy is going to go out to the cloud. It's going to get all the mesh objects, and it's going to throw an exception at us. Oh, that's great. Interesting. Let's make sure our credentials are correct. Oh. Huh. Well, you know, we might have to skip our link query for today. We're doing this in real time over...
it's not a problem at all.
Then she were... I'm not sure why we're throwing exceptions. Good bug for us to go track down.
Absolutely.
But what it would look like, I can show you that for sure. So you can, again, ask for code snippets over how to query mesh objects.
Mm-hmm.
And this will look exactly like you would expect to in Link. So you can say, from mesh objects, create a query mm-hmm. against the objects in the mesh where its title equals something or not equals something, or last updated was yesterday, or, you know, you can... construct as complex a query as you want. Now, the really neat thing about our query processor, so to speak, is that it can figure out three things. One, it can figure out which part of the query can execute most efficiently in our backend storage, literally using indices that we have sort of deeply ingrained in our storage service in the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And it can execute that component, that part of the query, as close to the data as possible, cheapest, most efficient. Then, of course, in our mesh operating environment, we can keep processing and keep linking and querying over that data to answer the question that you're asking with this link query.
Mm-hmm.
Send that to you, and of course, you can keep linking over that in memory using your local machine, which, again, we think is a very powerful model. And we've been working a lot with the Astoria team in .NET Framework to make sure that our query syntax is the same and our URL formatting is the same, and so it all looks nice and beautiful.
Outstanding. I'm sure developers are going to be really, really psyched to get their hands on this. So
we hope so.
Oh, for sure.
Talk quickly about the roadmap and
sure.
timing for the software.
Sure. We're doing a few things this year. We are doing an SDR, a system or software design review with a bunch of customers in a very near future, about 6 weeks or so.
Okay.
We're inviting them over here. A couple of days. We'll go through the stuff in depth. In the June-July timeframe, we are doing a CTP that'll be open for about maybe a couple of hundred developers.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be able to join, and we'll give them sort of space in the cloud and places for them to put their data and join their devices and write some code and play around in our cloud playground. We have a playground out there in the sky.
Nice.
It's the Mesh Sky Playground.
Great.
So they'll get to do that. Later this year, we'll do another CTP in the summer and at PDC. We're hoping to let developers actually, more and more and more developers, play with Mesh Fun.
Sounds fantastic.
Well, hey, thanks for taking your time out.
Pleasure. Always good to see you.
Yeah.
Channel 9.
Excellent, man. Well, you guys are doing great work, and thank you for spending so much time with us.
Hey, thanks for spending so much time with us. And, it's a lot of videos.
Hey, that's what I get paid to do, right?
We pay you?
So, don't tell anybody. So, thank you, guys. And I'm looking forward to seeing what both users and developers think about this. This is a really sort of an innovative new way of expressing your data.
We're waiting
your
for feedback. We're waiting to hear it.
That's right.
Good. Well, I've tried it. I like it. I think it's very cool that I can share all my videos with multiple devices. And it makes my plane trips easier. All right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.